Two Dead Girls and Jubilene contains material that may be upsetting to some audiences, including sudden loud noises, adult language, and depictions of murder and suicide. For more information, please find us on Instagram at Two Dead Girls Pod. That's the number 2 Dead Girls Pod.
Hi, Myra. It's me, Pa. I've got a lot of things to say to you, but I'm out of time. I haven't found the words. So I leave you just the facts, and I pray you find the truth between them. Fact 1. Since last we spoke, 3-4 years, I guess, I've been consumed with the hunt for Annie's killer. Fact 2. I haven't solved it, but I know I'm close. Because fact three, is he just tore this place apart. He didn't find my notes, thank God, but he knows. So I need you to listen to me, Myra, even if you hate what you're about to hear. I've spent thousands of hours poring over case files, talking to suspects, verifying alibis. I've been to the end of every dead end and beyond. I've done it all in secret. At least as much as anything's a secret in a town as small as this. Not because I was afraid of being called crazy, although I'm sure it will be. It was because I believed the person who hurt Annie and Jesse was still here, still living in Jubilene. I've left you everything I know. Some is here in my notebook. The rest is hidden. A precaution in case this message is intercepted. To protect the people who helped me. To spare all of you my fate. Whatever that turned out to be. Myra, I know it's not fair leaving this to you. And if I believed there was anyone else, If there's anything left of you that doesn't hate me, this will surely do the trick. But my hope is that you'll decide to finish what I started. Be careful, Myra. Jubilene is watching.
I have to go.
Myra, wait!
Don't touch me!
Sorry. I can't imagine what this must be like for you.
You're right, you can't. He can't. He doesn't get to just die and saddle me with... I should never have come here.
Tonight's top story, a deadly storm, a missing girl, and in Jubilene, Indiana, a homicide investigation.
Annabelle was this beautiful, innocent little girl.
Well, beautiful is a stretch. Hang on, are you recording this?
We're learning a second girl, Jessica Kaplan, has been found dead.
Sheriff Donnelly, sir, do you plan to make an apology?
We acted on the information available. I'm not going to apologize for that.
It's conspiracy. That's what I say. Goddamn conspiracy.
33% of murders in this country are never solved. Any reasonable person can see.
This here is a small town. Them girls was killed by a grass cut and him singing Jubilener. That's why he ain't been stopped.
No. The murder of Jesse Kaplan could have been stopped. Except nobody cared about Annie. Nobody did nothing until a second girl died.
Be careful, Myra. Jubilene is watching.
This is Two Dead Girls in Jubilene. Chapter 2. Manners of Suffocation.
Okay, thank you. Yes, well, I'm sure she'll turn up.
10 p.m., July 19th, 1997. Annabelle has been missing for 8 hours.
Brenda?
Hi.
Sheriff Donnelly. There's cupcakes in the fridge. Myra, get the sheriff a cupcake.
Okay.
Oh, no need. I help myself. Ed here pointed the way. That was Mrs. Newsom on the phone?
She teaches Annabelle and Myra's piano. She's along the route Annie would have walked, and we thought...
Yeah, I see.
What can we do to help?
Well, I was hoping to ask Ms. Myra a few questions.
I told you to get on with it.
It's actually procedure to conduct the interview in
She's
private.
She's been missing 8 hours, Sheriff. Get on with it.
Myra, I'd like to go over what happened today, up till your sister went missing. Please don't leave anything out. We're looking for a hidden clue, and it could seem like something ordinary. Do you understand?
Okay.
Speak up.
Yes, sir.
Good. How did the day begin?
Ma works Saturdays at Ernie's Diner. Annie and I stay home with Pa. We watch cartoons.
Do you like that? I mean, staying home with your father?
Yes, sir.
Does Annie?
Is that relevant?
Ed, shh.
She likes it all right.
Okay. Did anything unusual happen?
We got a call from a stranger.
A stranger?
A stranger?
It was a prank call. You've been getting them for weeks.
It's more useful in her words.
I just don't want to waste...
Ed!
Did you talk to this person, Myra? A man, was it?
No. Yes, I mean, well, Annie said he... said he asked to speak to Pa.
Did he?
No. He, hung up, I think.
Okay. What next?
Well, Pa sent Annie and I down to the Jenkins store, to get milk.
Crap.
You all right?
Broke my pencil. What kind of milk?
The one with the blue cap.
Why didn't your father come along?
Because I was covered in mud and bleeding out of 3 fingers.
Ed!
For the love of God! A flood washed out a telephone pole at the back of the farm and took a piece of our fence with it. I was trying all afternoon to reset the post. That's how I sliced my hand here. And that's why I sent the girls alone. But it ain't where Annie is. And it ain't how or why she ain't here.
Is all that true, Mike?
Now, hang on!
Edward, shut up!
Is it true?
Yes, sir.
Did Annie take anything unusual with her on your trip? A backpack, maybe? Money from her piggy bank?
All we took was $3 and a house key.
It's on a red lanyard, the key. We should put that in the description.
Okay, good. did you notice any cars on your walk? Anyone following you?
Oh, the road was empty.
Completely empty?
Yeah, I remember because, well, we stopped halfway. There were kittens, strays, I guess. They were caught in a storm drain, and we tried to rescue them with a tree branch. Until eventually one of those trucks, the ones with the bucket, one of those drove by and it scared them out of sight.
Okay. And then the store?
Yes, sir.
And then?
Myra?
I sent Annie home with the milk. Alone.
As I look back, I'm struck that Donnelly spares me the last question. We don't trace my steps any further, not past the gas and sip slushy machine, not the long way around a park which didn't used to be haunted, not onto Ernie's diner to beg Ma for a ride home in the oncoming rain. Donnelly doesn't ask why. Why on earth I ran off with schoolmate Denson McDougal? You remember, from Pa's wake? No one makes me say that at the same time an unknown murderous pervert was choking the life from my little sister, I was utterly preoccupied with a boy. I've spent much of the rest of my life grappling with how much an 11-year-old can or can't be held responsible for such a thing.
Thank you, Miss Myra. You've been very helpful.
Am I in trouble?
Of course not. Right, Ed?
I'm confused. If that's true, then why the coffin?
Berto, from work. I just told him everything. My train wreck eulogy, the trash workshop, Pa's tape. And I broke an additional bit of bad news. It's going to be impossible to do any further investigation of Pa's death via autopsy. Turns out he was cremated. The coffin thing goes back to Jesse Kaplan.
The second murder victim?
Mm-hmm. Because of the condition of the bodies, both girls were cremated. Annie was first, of course, and she was put in this awful cookie jar urn. But when Jesse's funeral came around, her parents resealed her ashes up in a child-sized box. Let people wonder if the killer's handiwork was still right there, beneath the lid.
Hi.
Yeah, well, it left one heck of an impression on Ma. You can't kneel at the side of a cookie jar and sob and blubber with your hand on the lid. If you want people to pray to the corpse of your kid, or your husband, for that matter, the big box is the way to go.
What did she...
Sorry? Signal's bad.
What does your mother think of the tape?
Oh. I didn't tell her.
What?
I didn't tell her about the tape.
No, I heard you. I mean, why not?
Because it's upsetting. And honestly, kind of embarrassing.
Embarrassing?
He's obsessed. Paranoid. He wasn't murdered, Berto. This whole thing is a gross fantasy, and keeping it from Ma is just me preserving a shred of his posthumous dignity. Which is a favor he doesn't deserve, by the way.
You don't know that.
Know what?
That he wasn't murdered.
You didn't hear the tape. He's off his rocker.
Well, she had to have known he was working on the case.
Unhappily married people living very separate lives? At this point, nothing would surprise me. I'm hanging up. I'll be in the office at 11 if you want to start with the Rodriguez stuff.
You're coming back to Chicago?
I'm not staying. I'm not playing his game.
But if he really was murdered...
If he really was murdered, then doing what he says is just begging to be the next little pile of ashes in a box the size of a corpse. And if he wasn't, which he wasn't, then the best I could do is chase the ghost of Jubileen in circles for years, just like he did, and find nothing, just like he did, and then one day, snap, record a delusional suicide tape, and throw myself in a hay baler, just like he did.
Suppose the killer is out there, and nobody catches him. Can you live with that?
I already do live with that.
Myra, let me... What's that?
I gotta go. As a tinted cruiser rolls to a stop behind me, I feel a squeeze in my throat. Anticipation. Dread. It recalls the sensation of July 20th, 1997, a pre-dawn conversation I wish I hadn't overheard. And a police siren I wish I could forget.
She's been gone 15 hours. Donnelly's checking train stations and bus depots. I told him how many times she wouldn't run away.
He's checking everywhere he can think of.
I want to go back out there.
No. If someone finds her, he needs to be able to find us.
I can't just sit on my hands while she's out there alone.
Well, you sent her.
Excuse me.
For Forget it. We're exhausted. We should try sleeping in shifts. If this goes on all day...
I didn't send her alone.
No.
Okay.
Okay. But you did send her with Myra, who is 11 years old.
My father sent me on an overnight bus to Dallas when I was 11.
That's different.
How?
She's not... I know how you think of Myra, but she's not your son.
What difference does that make?
Your father wouldn't have sent two girls on that overnight bus.
Maybe not, but he would have sent them up the road to the store. And up until now, so would I. So would anybody in this town. So would you. Sorry. I'm sorry. I'm just... She's been gone too long. And I can't shake this feeling that something terrible has happened.
After I found out what happened to Annie, I did some reading. Turns out when a person is suffocated by strangulation, the only immediate discomfort is in the airway. Annie would have felt a pinch in her esophagus, a 3 on the Wong-Baker scale. But as CO2-rich blood cells enter the spinal cord, falling pH levels signal the brain that suddenly, simultaneously, every single life-sustaining function of the body is imperiled. That pain is a 10, and it's everywhere. The brain bulges as blood vessels malfunction under increased pressure. The diaphragm and lungs spasm wildly in search of oxygen. In the tips of the fingers and toes, pain animates involuntary flailing. The medulla believes you're underwater. It's trying to force you to swim. In fact, pretty much the only body part that isn't screaming is your larynx. At the moment Annie needs to scream most desperately in all her life, she can't manage a sound. I wasn't suffocating. Not really. I guess I'm just trying to say, standing outside the kitchen, realizing Annie might not ever come home, I sympathized.
What's that?
Myra?
I can't breathe.
Ed, she's having a panic attack.
Myra, stop it. Myra, just breathe. Myra!
Do you hear that?
I may only be 11 in this memory, but I know what that means. They call when they find your sister. They come in person when they find her body. I'm back in the Prius. An officer in a wide-brimmed hat raps on my window. Liam?
Yep. Sorry, I look absurd in this hat.
What's happening? Is Ma... Did something...
No, she's... Yeah, everything's fine. Just, something I need to show you. Are you coming? I guess I knew you were upset, so I didn't figure you were gonna skip town
at
first light.
Pa's notebook?
Yeah. What?
Sirens were a bit much, don't you think?
Well, I didn't start with the siren. I went out to your mom's house looking for you, and I don't have your cell phone number. It turns out she doesn't either, by the way.
It's a new number. I've got work stuff in Chicago, and... Forget it. Do you want to show me or not?
Right here. What do you think?
When it comes to my sister, conspiracy theories abound. And they usually have one thing in common. The name at the end of Liam's finger. Former Sheriff Craig Donnelly. I think these sorts of stories that say cops were working for the Illuminati or for government pedophiles or covering up a murder by one of their own, they're just overcomplications of a case bungled by small-town cops. In this case, well-meaning folks who never investigated anything worse than marijuana cigarettes. At least not until they found Annie. Craig Donnelly. In my book, he's just a guy in over his head. An incompetent. Not a killer.
Well?
July 20th, 97. That's...
Your sister. Donnelly has late lunch, Linville, alone. Convenient, but we can come back to it. I'm talking about this.
August 8th. Jesse Kaplan was abducted around 3 p.m.
Your dad says Donnelly... Does that...
I don't know. What were you hoping for? Unscramble the letters and it spells the name of the killer?
No, I just thought... He left all this for you. Maybe... It was meant to lead you to the next clue?
Cruising Texarkana. Chasing Cadillacs. No, this is the whole thing with Donnelly. He actually does have a good alibi for Jesse. I mean, not good for him. It makes him look like an idiot. August 8th, 3 p.m., he's at the county jail, interrogating his only suspect in the murder of my sister.
Are you saying he didn't realize? Until Jesse died?
That the guy he'd humiliated, investigated, arrested... was innocent? No. Jesse sent us all back to the beginning. To the hours after Annie. To the second in a series of wrongs that could never be taken back.
Ed? Brenda?
Sheriff? Did you find something? Did you find Annie?
We're back to the morning of July 20th, 1997. Donnelly stands at the foot of our porch, flanked by four deputies. They're familiar boys, born and raised in Jubilene. Two of them, I see, are soaked to mid-chest and shivering in the pre-dawn chill. Another, Dave Hightower, is newly married to my Sunday school teacher, Miss Cindy. And I realize with a sort of detached sympathy that it'll probably be her who has to scrub the slowly crusting vomit off the front of Dave's uniform. He's barely 23 years old and pale as death. They all are.
I came to tell you, I went up to the Greyhound Depot to see if I could shake loose any tips, and while I was up there, a big rig trucker stopped out on CR-19, got on our police channel to report something strange floating in the Old Town Quarry. The boys here met me down there, and, hell, Brenda. I've never had to do this before, and I'm no good at it. She's dead. Annabella's dead.
Oh, God.
Drowned.
Ed.
Brenda.
No, not bus stop.
Maybe we could send Myra inside.
How did it happen?
Brenda, please.
You told me to stay inside.
And then
I was
we can talk
sitting
this
on
over.
My hands. She drowned.
She didn't drown, goddamn.
What did you say?
She didn't drown. Ed, we need you to come down to the station with us.
For what?
Maybe it's a mistake. Some other girl drowned. The body
is... It's not a mistake. And for the last time, nobody drowned. Annabelle was strangled. She was already dead when she was thrown in that quarry. Stripped, half-naked. We think it's likely the killer that he... Please, Ed. We've known each other a long time. Come get in the car. Don't make me cuff you in front of Myra.
Are you... accusing me of murder?
Craig, we go to church together.
You don't think...
If I kill anybody, it's gonna be you. If you hadn't been wasting time on the damn bus stops...
Jesus Christ, Hightower. I said no guns.
Pa, stay back.
You're gonna shoot a grieving father on his own porch.
Stop. Everybody stop. Nobody is going to shoot anybody. Ed is going to walk real slow to the back of the cruiser.
If you think I'm just going to go quietly, well, that's some kind of explanation.
Okay. The utility truck, the one Myra saw on the way to the store yesterday, that was Bill Burton. He was headed out to State Road 270 North to fix that telephone pole behind y'all's farm. Says he was out there 3 or 4 hours. From when your girls walked out to Jenkins' shop until the rain started dumping. He never saw you, Ed. Said that fence been righted 2 days or more. So, nobody's accusing anybody of anything at this juncture. We'd just like you to come down to the station to help us figure out why Bill Burton would lie about a thing like that. Because the alternative... that'd be you lying. About where you were, about what you were doing when your daughter disappeared.
In the next 48 hours, Donnelly will delve into every aspect of our private lives. He'll separately interrogate us, asking questions about the cut on Pa's hand, what he was really doing the afternoon of July 19th. Questions about a dishonorable discharge from the Air Force. About why and for how long he and Ma have slept in separate rooms, in separate beds. He'll ask questions I don't quite understand. About if Pa has ever brought me into that room. If Pa has ever brought Annie into that bed. Donnelly's deputies will toss our house twice, on two separate warrants. Although they'll never spot anything more consequential than the thing Donnelly already spotted 12 hours previous, in the midst of retrieving his cupcake. An item which, as much as Annie's disappearance itself, set in motion the Rube Goldberg machine that destroyed my family. An unopened gallon of 2% milk. As Pa sits into the back of the cruiser, his eyes meet mine. And I know, instantly, that Donnelly is wrong. That no killer could manage such deep and earnest bewilderment. Such righteous indignation. Such bottomless despair. But what about Donnelly? Meaning, was he the head of a conspiracy to frame Pa? A plan that fell apart in the face of a badly timed second murder? Or was he just a bumbling bully of a cop? Scared out of his wits by the sight of a murdered child? I guess I've never been 100% sure.
Myra. Hey.
Sorry, there's... Read it to me one more time.
Cruising Texarkana, chasing Cadillacs.
It's a Wayne Hancock song. Liam stares at me expectantly. He's guessing at something I already know. That Pa owned Johnny Law on a cassette. In my mind's eye, I give him a shrug and a smile. I wish him good luck, and I walk away. But then I hear Berto. Can you live with it if he's out there and he goes free? I do live with it. Don't I? Or is the truth that my life has been on hold all these years? Is my entire lonely existence a defense against how badly I want, maybe need, to ask who killed Annabelle Abernathy, and to be able to name someone who isn't me? In the silence, I notice the slow-turning drone of race cars in far-off Kent, their drivers circling one of 1,000 cemeteries for Brickyard Dreams. Like me, they race and race and race. And yet with every turn find themselves hurtling back towards the place it all began. Okay. I'll look.
Well, what about those work things?
I can put them off. You'll have the whole town in a twist if you go out to the farm and start going through Pa's stuff.
Okay. Of course. I'll talk to you soon, I guess.
You got a pen?
What's that?
My cell number. Don't chase me around with those sirens. Gives me the creeps.
Hey, what do you think we're gonna find on that tape?
Proof that Pa was going senile. And nobody killed him. I say it more for myself than for Liam. Because the alternative, that it may lead to the identity of a man who killed my sister, who killed Jesse Kaplan, and then killed my father to cover it up? I'm not sure if that's something to hope for. Or something to be afraid of. I feel a familiar tightness in my windpipe. The slipknot of my past tickling gently at my throat. It's a far cry from strangulation, but a manner of suffocation, just the same. Two Dead Girls in Jubilene was written, directed, and produced by Ethan Whelan. It stars Emily Goss as Myra, Zachary Cantrell as Liam, Susan Harmon as Brenda, Michael McShane as Ed, Marcelo Tubert as Berto, John Ali as Donnelly, Carrie Gutierrez as Young Myra, original score by Kevin Hutchins, associate producer Emily Goss, associate producer Zachary Cantrell. One Eye Open was written and recorded by Andrea Perez and Peyton Widener. I guess I've never wondered what you were searching for. Thanks to Kat, Ron, the Evans, Monisha, Jack, David, and Tyler, without whom there could be no Jubilee. If you enjoyed listening, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts, or tell a friend. For cast bios, episode transcripts, and more, find Our Little Town on Instagram, at @2deadgirlspod. That's at @2deadgirlspod. Thanks. I'm walking this way again, with one eye open. Two Dead Girls in Jubilene is a work of fiction. Any resemblance to real events or to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.